you all. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey, and my name is Dick. At this time, we begin the TechNet, which has met on this particular frequency for lots of years. The TechNet began in September of 1982. This is TechNet number 1386 of the series. The main purpose is education. We amateurs try to educate each other about how all this hardware works, how the 26 different kinds of ham radio are carried out, FM 2-meter repeater type ham radio that you're listening to right now. It's just one of the 26 kinds. There's 25 more of them. So it's a very educational hobby. Many manufacturers, many employers have discovered that if you really want somebody to understand radio and wireless technology, in many cases you have to hire an enthusiastic ham radio operator. By way of that educational process, they find out how radio equipment really works. Let me drop. And as you know, when you do drop every minute or so of conversation, we should wait long enough for all four beeps so that everything can be reset. One of the complaints we've heard quite frequently in the past is that people trying to sign into the technical net from the outer areas become frustrated by the fact that the timing doesn't allow them to get in. One of the well-kept secrets is that there is a way with EchoLink to do that. In other words, the kind of EchoLink that's used with this particular repeater, W2VL, the W2VL repeater, the Limark repeater on Long Island, has a technique by which when you're using EchoLink and you're using the text messaging page on the lower right-hand corner, there's a box you can use by which you type in the word break, B-R-E-A-K. That allows your call letters, if you're a qualified user of EchoLink, your call letters become voice synthesized, and it comes over the repeater, even though there isn't proper timing for you to get in. So you can let your presence be known. As it is right now, I only know of two people who have ever really used it, Bernie, K2YO, and K4NBC are the only people that seem to know about this well-kept secret as to how to get your edge in word-wise if you're out of the area and would like to sign into the TechNet. Let me drop. There's a lot of brain power in the New York City area, and we try to tap into that, the TechNet. This particular repeater covers a portion of New Jersey, a portion of southern New York State, a portion of Connecticut, quite a bit of Long Island, and in there we try to tap into that brain power. The equipment you're now using really is heavily transistorized. That transistor invented at Bell Laboratories in roughly 1947, 1948, Jacques Bertin, and I can't think of their three names right now, but the three guys who invented the transistor. One of the things that's not well known is where was that transistor invented? And the answer is in the Tribeca area of Manhattan Island, one of the five boroughs of New York City. Tribeca stands for a triangle below Canal Street. So in that section of land is where the transistor was invented. So if there are people who think that Silicon Valley has all the concentration of brain power, well, your life is really being dictated by transistors and everything that involves. Transistors are the basic building block for your microprocessors, for your synthesized radios, your transmitters, your receivers, your television sets. Transistors are everything. That was invented at Tribeca in New York City.
I have an announcement for John.
Shut up! So, the way a person signs into the technical net is to give John and me your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. If you're just listening, you need not to check in to say you're listening. After 28 years, after 29 and a half years, going on 30 years of the TechNet, we believe somebody is listening. A typical sign-in would sound like this: Kilo Delta 2, Baker Hotel Yankee, and Jim, and yes. So he's giving me his call letters, his name, and the word yes, which means he really is checking in. So do we have any check-ins at this time? Please give me your call letters, name, and the word yes. K2RIW.
N2XZN. A question for the TechNet about transmission lines, and a question to John right now. Did he get an email?
Okay, Rich has checked in. We had a, Wes has checked in with a question about transmission lines. I think there was a double or a triple. Who else was signing in at the same time?
82, BMP, Joe, yes.
Joe, is that Baker Mike Papa? Kilo Delta 2, Baker Mike Papa. Is that do I have your call letters correctly, Joe?
Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Mike Papa is correct.
Very fine. We got Joe. We got Wes, Joe. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters right now.
Kilo Charlie 2, Mike Yankee, Ray, yes.
Okay, Mike Yankee, we got you, Ray. All righty. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. The next person to check in with a question or a comment, can you please give me your call letters, name, and the word yes right now.
And WS2N, Paul with the Space Report. Good evening, Dick.
We got you, Paul. And one last call. Anyone else? Give me your call letters right now. Okay, I think the answer is no. I think we have a run. Let me give a long enough delay to make sure that anyone else from the outer areas wants to check in gets a chance to do so. Okay. Wes, go ahead with your question. M2XJN, K2RIW.
Yes, it's a regular question. I have sent you the schematic. I would like to be after Paul. So let's handle it. I just want to make sure that John got the material for this TechNet, which is exactly the same one as we discussed before, plus additional drawing. John?
Can I answer that, Dick?
Go ahead, John.
Negative was that you sent me a repeat of video. That's not what I wanted. I wanted the script running. KC2WGV.
Yeah, last week there was a drawing that was brought up. I'm trying to bring that one up right now.
Did you receive just now another email which is like a forwarding of the last email?
I'm checking right now if I'm receiving a new email. And let's see if I did. Yes, I received an email.
That was 8:03 p.m. 5 minutes ago I had sent the email. You should have three links. Two links with the schematics because you have a Unix system, and one for the video.
Yeah, this YouTube video was in the most recent email. The one I'm looking for is the previous email from last week in which there was a white diagram of transmission lines that we started getting into, and we didn't finish that particular discussion.
Yeah, but the question is, did you get with this email that I sent you 5 minutes ago, two drawings or just one drawing? Or only just the link for the video?
Right now, I did get those drawings. Now, the drawing which shows the coaxial cable or the twin lead with signals on it, is that the drawing that we were going to discuss last week, and what's the easiest way for a person to get to that drawing? If he goes to huntfamily.com, Bernie@huntfamily.com, will the person listening now be able to find a copy of that drawing? Over to you, Wes.
John asked me to resend that email, just forwarded that email from last week, but this one has two schematics. One is that waveform schematic, and the other one is waveform schematic with the increased current waveform creating kind of eye in between. So my question is, do you have two of this drawing or just one drawing? On the same email, there was a link for YouTube video.
I got both of those drawings, and we were starting to discuss that situation last week as to whether or not a person touching that cable at certain locations would or would not sense voltage. We decided that last week that when a standing wave ratio exists, when a wave is traveling down any kind of a transmission line, and it can be a 60-cycle transmission line or a 4-megacycle transmission line, a wave traveling down a transmission line has a certain voltage versus time, and that voltage is, in most cases, a sine wave, and it's going to go through that complete cycle If it was a 4 megacycle signal, it's going to go through the complete sine wave voltage at any one point of measuring, 4 million times per second. And by putting a short circuit at the end of that cable, assuming the transmitter can tolerate it, maybe it's a signal generator, which can always tolerate a switch, with rare exception, can tolerate a short circuit. When there is a short circuit, an open circuit, or anything but a, let me call it 50-ohm load at the far end of a 50-ohm coaxial cable, you are setting up a certain amount of reflected power. That reflected power does create what's called a standing wave ratio. Standing wave ratio means that as you use something like a slotted line or some other method of measuring the voltage at various points along the cable, you'll find places where the voltage is high, you'll find places where the voltage is low, because there is a standing wave, because there is a signal traveling forward and a signal traveling in reverse. In general, you cannot, with reasonable circumstances, set up a standing wave on a 60-cycle transmission line. And the main reason for that is a 60-cycle transmission line has a wave length that is many hundreds of miles long. On top of that, the source of energy on a 60-cycle transmission line system, power line system, really can't...
Repeater, time out. Repeater, time out.
It really can't tolerate a short circuit. It could tolerate a misload, a mismatch. And the word mismatch in the case of power line takes on very funny characteristics. So what's awfully confusing for an awful lot of people about transmission lines and standing waves is that if I'm using a directional power sensing device, such as a Bird wattmeter or a directional coupler, or certain methods of using a network analyzer. And whenever you detect power in a directional manner, the standing wave ratio essentially disappears. In other words, once you're using instrumentation that can look at the forward going signal independent of the reverse going signal, now with a reasonably low loss transmission line, no matter where along that transmission line you measure the voltage or measure the current, it will be the same voltage at every position, or if you're measuring current, it'll be the same current at every position. And then when you take your Bird wattmeter and flip over the slug, so it's now measuring reverse power, which is the usual way that you would sense standing wave ratio. If your antenna was a perfect load for your particular transmission line, then when you use your Bird wattmeter or similar directional coupler to look for the reverse going signal, it would be zero. As the antenna deviates from an ideal 50-ohm resistive load, in the case of 50-ohm coaxial cable, or an ideal 300-ohm load, if it's 300-ohm twin lead transmission line, whenever you differ from a pure resistive load that matches that particular transmission line, when that is the load, if that's the mismatch antenna or the mismatch load at the far end, some amount of the signal will reflect and come back. Not too different from what you sense when you stand in front of a picture window of a store. When you stand in front of a store and you look at the glass at a grazing angle, you recognize the fact that some signal is reflecting off of the glass, that there is a kind of a mirror image there, a dim mirror image. And what's really happening is that light wave hitting the glass recognizes the fact that the glass has a different dielectric constant than the air around it. The air is a kind of a transmission line. The glass is another kind of a transmission line. There's a different impedance, different dielectric constant, and some amount of reflection takes place. So Mother Nature, whenever there is a signal of any kind propagating through a medium, if the medium changes in any way abruptly at some particular place, a mismatched load, a change in dielectric constant, or whatever, you will get a reflection. And once there is reflected energy, there is the possibility of setting up a standing wave situation. So when you're using that Bird wattmeter, for measuring forward power or measuring reverse power, as you move the Bird wattmeter down that cable, the voltage will appear to be constant, the power will appear to be constant, no matter where you measure it. Only when you use non-directional sensing device, like, for instance, the probe on a slotted line. Now, for the first time, you are using a sensing device that is not directional. It looks at the forward-going voltage. It looks at the reverse-going voltage. I better say signal. The forward-going signal, the reverse-going signal. And it, inside of that probe, for the first time, mixes the two together. The magic of a transmission line, the part that's hard to believe, is that it will tolerate a forward-going signal. It'll tolerate a reverse-going signal. It allows those two to happen simultaneously, even though the forward and the reverse signal may have come from the same signal generator. Doesn't matter. The transmission line, in general, keeps the forward-going signal thoroughly independent from the reverse-going signal. On the transmission line itself, no real mixing, no real interaction per se takes place. That is a slight, there's a slight exception to that, and that is if the signal on the transmission line is so potent that the total peak voltage is now getting to the point where the transmission line overheats, arcs over, or whatever, now some funny things can happen, and some mixing of the forward-going signal and the reverse-going signal can take place. But in general, the transmission line, just like many other coaxial components, keeps those two events thoroughly independent. Now, if you're standing on ground or you're standing on one lead of a twin lead transmission line, and you now touch the other lead so that there's now potentially a voltage across your body, yes, in that particular situation, you will now, as you move along the cable, there will be places where the voltage hits maximum and or minimums, or other places where the current hits maximums or minimums. And so at a point where the voltage really is a maximum, it's now very similar to what happens when you've got a violin string that's being operated by way of the bow of the violin. If you used your microscope, so to speak, and you looked at the string, you would find out that the string is creating a standing wave. The string has a certain length. The bow is creating continuous power being put into the string. And at certain points, the string is moving quite large up and down. At a quarter wavelength to the right or to the left of that, the string is not moving at all. The string is tilting back and forth like the seesaw, but right at the center, at the pivot point of the seesaw, so to speak, the motion of the string appears to be zero. In that particular case, there is a wave going forward on the string, a wave going back. Your eye sees the combination of the two, and you see certain points where there is a big motion of the string and other places where there's a small motion of the string. A standing wave on a transmission line does behave in a very similar manner. There's a whole lot going on with transmission lines that's not obvious. And the first time a person hears this jazz, of course it's complicated. Of course it doesn't seem to make sense. It doesn't follow common sense. You'll have to read the articles on the subject quite often in order to absorb a little bit on each time you read it. And learning brand new material always is like that. There's always going to be an uncomfortable feeling of what you don't know versus what you would like to know. So this is a little bit of an introduction.
Repeater, time out. Repeater, time out. Cancel.
So what you've heard is a brief thumbnail sketch of some of the operation of a transmission line. And of course, the portion that one of the characteristics of a transmission line that a lot of people find difficult to understand is that it keeps the forward going and the reverse going waves independent of each other. And you can get you probably heard me say it before, you can get a little bit of a sample of that by dropping a pebble at two ends of a pool of water, and you watch the waves from the northern pebble and the southern pebble. You watch those waves spread toward the center of the pool, and those two waves fold right through each other with essentially no effect, as long as the wavelength is high enough that there's no white cap. So a ripple of the water, the waves, a ripple of water, when you drop a pebble into a puddle, so to speak, is a kind of a transmission line. It's a radial transmission line, a flat transmission line, and it gives you some of these same effects. So the diagram that Wes presented last week was asking questions along these lines. It was a pair of white diagrams with a twin lead transmission line with a standing wave present on it, And in the diagram, there was a man standing either on ground or on one of those wires and touching the other wire, and you want to know, is he sensing voltage? Is he sensing current? And so on. What would that man or what would a voltmeter in that area sense? As I said, this is not a simple subject. A lot of people have a lot of trouble with it, and we're just going to go lightly through it now. We'll go through it more deeply a little bit later on. But the diagram that was presented by Wes last week that you can get a hold of by going to Hunt Family. Wes, here we go. Bernie at huntfamily.com will allow you to get access to the particular diagram that we're talking about.
Repeater, time out.
Joe, when you come back, Tell me whether or not you got that website correctly so that you can go look at those with antenna. I'll be able to hear you on the input, Joe, so don't worry. Kilo Delta 2, Baker Mike Papa, KQLAW. Used on mobile antennas. As you make the quarter wave whip that you can mount on top of an automobile, slightly longer than a quarter wave. You start taking from that end. I think.
Tonight. Make sure you get the fellas tonight.
optical beam width becomes more narrow as you add X length to the antenna. Each wave is where you get the most amount of benefit on a single element. If you only have one driven element, if there's only one driven element to the antenna, then 5/8 wave gives you the best performance for a single element. When it comes to the kind of antenna that's used on a repeater type, something like a
repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
The kind of antenna that's used at a repeater site consists of more than one element. When you go beyond 5/8 wave, you start developing lobes all over the place, and you don't have a stronger lobe on the horizon. However, when you go to multiple elements, I was starting off with a quarter wave. I was starting off with an antenna that was a quarter wave long. I was slowly allowing it to grow longer, and as it goes from quarter wave to 3/8 wave to 5/8 wave, you do get a slightly stronger signal on the horizon for a vertically polarized magmount, we'll say. At the length of 5/8 wave, you get the maximum signal on the horizon. As you go beyond 5/8 wave, the signal on the horizon starts going back down, and the antenna starts developing multiple lobes all over the place. That's if you have one single element, one single feed point. If you're now smart enough to go the next step, which is to build a multiple element collinear. In other words, you have two, three, or four radiators vertically stacked in a collinear manner. Now you can get a hell of a lot more gain on the pattern, on the horizon. And now you're starting to develop a pancake pattern. But that's a more complicated feeding arrangement to have multiple elements in the system. one single element, 5/8 wave gives you the biggest bang for the dollar. If there's only one single driven element. Wonder if that makes a little bit of sense, Ray. KC2, Mike Yankee. I'll be hearing you on the input from Yonkers. KQRIW. Go ahead, Ray. For everybody.
I kind of get the suspension, but I kind of don't because it doesn't. It's not a wave. The waves don't hit.
Okay, I think I. I think I've got what you're asking, Ray. This is a 5/8 wave is not a resonant lens. How can it receive well? And by the way, how can it transmit well when it's only 5/8 wave long? Turns out you can make the antenna any length you want, Ray, believe it or not. If you've got an antenna tuner that has enough dynamic range to it, if your antenna tuner has enough dynamic range, you can make the antenna any length you want, and you are with the antenna tuner, you are electronically forcing the antenna to be resonant. The antenna doesn't have to be physically resonant at any particular length. It only has to be electronically resonant. So by way of your antenna tuner, you can make an antenna anything from a few inches long to a few miles long. You can make it resonant with a wide enough dynamic range antenna tuner. Once the antenna tuner is there and you've electronically resonated the antenna, you'll get all the performance you're allowed to for that particular length. And as you change that length, the pattern does change. 5/8 wave of length of a single radiator gives you the best pattern on the horizon. If you want more signals on the horizon, you have to have more than one driven element in order to do that. Wonder if that makes some sense, Ray. KC2, Mike Yankee, KQRIW. Electronic resonance is required in order for it to transmit or receive well, and your antenna tuner can do that. By the way, a 5/8 wave antenna requires an antenna tuner. It requires an impedance matcher. A quarter wave antenna has an impedance of something like 35 ohms. Thank you.
real song right here. Whatever this is called, I'm playing on the music. I'm not one time to record the wrong song. We don't know what happened. When I'm doing a captain, find one. It must be how you see the gun. Yes, I was just this song, I'm playing on the music. I'm not going to see this is called the wrong song. I'm going to write it with my new right now song. Why the hell are we like that? We're going to have to do it in the fucking computer.
predict that that carrier is 60 over on the station.
Interesting information. S5 at my QTH. Which is strong evidence that there's more than one.
Yes, I think that concurs with what Andy was telling me.
So, every antenna requires some kind of impedance matching, with rare exception. The impedance matching is which allows you to couple a significant amount of energy into that particular load and radiate it somewhere into space. And the length of the antenna and its physical layout determines where the energy goes. And once again, as you want more gain than you can get out of a 5/8 wave ground plane, then you have to have more than one collinear element. That's what a station master is, 3, 4, 5 elements. And now, in theory, the gain is not limited. If you're smart enough to be able to impedance match it and physically hold it vertically enough, you could put 10 elements vertically stacked and end up with more than 20 dB of gain over isotropic. Experimentally, it's been done. The difficulty is when you're getting a really narrow pancake pattern, is now you've got to really worry about how vertical the whole antenna is. A buddy of mine wanted to put a very high gain antenna on top of a sailboat. And at first he forgot about the fact that when you're really using the sailboat, it tilts over at some particular angle and the antenna's not vertical anymore. So on the starboard side, the antenna was squirting its pancake pattern signal up above the horizon. And on the port side, it was squirting it below the horizon. He only had a strong signal off the bow and off the stern. So, and even if you mount it on a good radio tower, how vertical is the tower? If the antenna is on top of the tower, you got to worry about when the wind blows and it bends the antenna. That pattern is going to be bent. So, high gain. It comes with a couple of caveats, and that caveats are whether or not you're going to squirt all that beautiful narrowband elevation signal in the right direction. We'll probably have some more questions on this in future weeks, Ray, and you're allowed to come back and ask them again. It's not an easy concept. Quick transmission. Let's see if you're able to come over this on the input. KC2WCB.
Think about it for a while.
Copy you beautifully on the input, but you're not going to be able to do it. Sky is within a couple of blocks, using a bit of power. He's 10 dB louder than you and I. C3WGB?
Yep.
Very well on the input. Raleigh W. Thank you. hearing you. No. But not coming through the repeater, unfortunately. So I just understood what transmission sent out to do the beginner report. So stand by and wait. Let's see now. I think that's most of what we've got here. K2RIWT.